Hello, everyone. I am Mark Heslin, a medical student from Cooper Medical School of Rowan University, and I would like to welcome you to the Matching into Residency during COVID-19. With me are Sultan Bukhari.
Hi, nice to meet everyone. I'm Sultan Bukhari. I'm a fourth year at Rowan Medical School.
And Samir Mehta.
Hi, everyone. I'm a fourth year at Rowan SOM as well, and I'm just happy to be here.
And we are part of the Medical Student Council for the American College of Physicians New Jersey chapter. And on today's podcast, we're going to be speaking about the residency application process this year and how the COVID-19 pandemic will affect this year's process compared to previous application cycles. But before we start, I would like to let you know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect the views or opinions of the American College of Physicians or the American College of Physicians New Jersey chapter. And with that, I'd like to introduce our special guest, Dr. Renita Sharma. Dr. Renita Sharma is the Internal Medicine Residency Director at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, a position she has held since 2005. In addition, she is the Vice Chair for the Department of Medicine and Chief of the Division of Education. Dr. Sharma is active with the American College of Physicians, serving on the Governor's Council. She was the ACP Governor for Northern New Jersey between 2010 and 2014. Recently, she was inducted as a master of the College of American College of Physicians. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Sharma.
Thank you, guys. Very excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, with that, I guess we'll start with the questions. So, Dr. Sharma, the first question that we have is, so what are your general qualities you look for in a good internal medicine applicant?
So I think when we meet candidates, and this year it'll be virtually, but we first get to look at the files, I think we want to sense a pulse of excellence and commitment. So excellence clearly is written all over one's application, and their commitment is not just grades and scores, but it's their commitment and passion for medicine. What have they done beyond medicine, their community service or their research, or their global health endeavors, or a startup they were engaged in. There's so many opportunities, helping a local food kitchen. There could be so many. So I think we want to look at the entire applicant beyond just their academic portfolio.
Awesome. And I think that's great advice, because I think a lot of students do focus a lot on the scores and the more of very objective data, and kind of hearing that you know, it's a very holistic process is great to hear. Awesome. So yeah, I guess our second question is, how can we show interest to a specific program without doing an away rotation there in this application cycle?
So I think in medicine, we're somewhat lucky in that away rotations were never strongly encouraged for all mainstream applicants. So I think that if you meet the criteria that programs review, and then you want to express continued interest, the best way to do that would be to reach out to the program directly. Another option would be your personal mentors in medical school who may have some connection to the program you're interested in. They might be able to reach out to the program leadership or to specific faculty at the same institution. So I think those might be some of the ways to connect. It is a little harder because it's virtual now and everything's off of paper, but I think the fundamentals of expressing interest really can happen once you are selected to interview at the place. And if you're not selected to interview at a particular program, I think you need to pull out all the tricks out of your hat. So your faculty mentors, your peers who might be already trainees in the programs, those are some of the mechanisms to infiltrate, if I could use that word, the program to get your message and interest across.
Awesome. Yeah, and going off that, I know that that Robert Wood Johnson is having an event coming up soon. I believe it's like a Zoom meeting. Do you find that a lot of other programs are also doing that? And how kind of would you say we would be able to connect and find out about these events prior to the interview season?
Yeah, well, thank you for putting a plug in for our program. But ours was actually organized by our GME department. And we, as a medicine program, had been struggling to figure out how do we really get the word out. I think a lot of information about residencies and the selections that are reeling through your head are probably through word of mouth. You already know the kind of programs you probably want to be at. But I think it makes it a lot harder this time. I'm not aware that a lot of programs are doing this open house concept. And this is the first one we're doing, so I could certainly tell you more once it's done, but we have advertised through social media that this is happening. And so I hope that more medicine programs do this, but I'm not sure that that's very wide across the board. I know that surgery and anesthesia and other specialties are doing more of it, partly because medicine is a bit scared about the volume of applicants we'll get this year. And do we really want to open sort of Pandora's box and invite everybody? I think that might be part of the fear. But we're ready. We're going ahead to see what we can do on September 29th.
Awesome. Yeah, I think many of my colleagues are very excited about that. So that should be awesome. Thanks. And my next question is, so what would you say is the biggest disadvantage that students will have in this application cycle compared to previous cycles?
So, you know, when I think about this, what the charm of the interview and being on site was to get a pulse of the program from a student's perspective, and for us as program leaders to palpate that interest, that energy, that vibe, that motivation of the candidate. And unfortunately, for both parties, there's a bit of a loss in that. So I would say that we're going to have to do the best we can. We're going to have to, I think, in personal statements and so forth, it's good to give information about you that you may have given only in person. So I think we're going to have to learn a lot more about the applicant through their portfolio and learn a little more and confirm some of that when we meet them virtually.
Great. And thank you for those great responses, Dr. Sharma. And now my colleague Sultan will ask a few of the next questions.
Sure.
Hello again. Thank you again for doing this. We really appreciate this. Us medical students, especially in this MASH cycle, with a lot of the unknown and the fear, this is really helps alleviate some of those issues. So thank you again. So my first question is, what is the best advice for applicants that you can give for this application cycle versus a different cycle or the previous cycles?
Yeah, great question, Sultan. I think the important thing is know yourself. Know your candidacy, know your portfolio, stick to what you hoped to apply to and where you thought you had your best chance. I really don't think there should be a frenzy and almost a madness in opening up and applying to three or four times the number of programs. I think that would hurt people. As program directors, we talk a lot on our chat about, you know, restricting. We're all going to be interviewing the same number of applicants. We're all going to be listing the same number of applicants on our rank list. So there's no real push from the program's end to double or even increase by 20, 25%. So I'm hoping that the applicants can also adhere to that to some degree to make this a good cycle. So that's what I would say. Know yourself, know your portfolio, know where you could be and should be. And then it's always good to dream big. In every cycle, I tell students, virtual or not, dream big. But there has to be some containment about that and around that.
Okay. Thank you for that. For a previous thing you mentioned about the increased applications you aren't possibly anticipating, how are you going to go about managing with that?
Yes. So it is, you know, as you know, nothing has opened yet. So October 15th, I believe, we'll be looking at things. So I think there are still going to be some basic cutoff that we have to engage in because we cannot look at 4,000 applicants. It's not humanly possible. So we will be looking, you know, and each program will set its marks. So, you know, exams, maybe a little bit of the school they're from, the legacy of the institution, the legacy, the candidate. Maybe there's internally it's a student, or perhaps it's, you know, the best friend of somebody that's applied to us that's already in our program that we trust immensely. So I think we'll have to put all of these together and do our best to dwindle down to a number that we can manage to really handle. And I would say that this time we're going to double up what we open. So if we look at 400 applicants, this time we're going to really look through 800, but we can't do 4,000. So we're going to use some cutoffs. You know, they got through their clerkships without any problem. They're, if the step, they passed their exam on the first attempt. So I think each program will make different criteria, but they're going to be very basic and very rudimentary. And if there's something that, and then if something beyond that, we'll look to see what their personal statement says, what their activities have been, what has been their research productivity, or how have they given back to their community, or did they lead their school's clinic in the inner city? They travel globally. I mean, there's so many things we can pick, but it's hard to pick as this kind, as with these criteria being the first screening tool. Am I making
okay. sense? Yes, yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, thank you for that. My next question is, I know a lot of programs are using social media such as Facebook and Instagram to reach out to students for as recruitment tools. Can you comment on this and any possible pros and cons of this approach?
Right. So I think it's quite widespread, and you know, social media is clearly a generational thing, and it's fantastic. But again, I would say do your homework, read the website, compare the website to what's being said on social media, because there are inaccuracies on social media. People post things that are not true. So I think the challenges are, A, programs really need to update their website. So that's something we've been doing very vigorously this whole time. We made a video, and all of that is updated. But I think some of the programs are struggling getting that going. So I've been urging all my colleagues that get the website going, make sure it's accurate. And then I think the candidates should look at social media and see if there's kind of a matchup. There's a string of truth across everything. There's no reason for people not to be honest, so I wouldn't worry too much. But sometimes you've got people writing things. They were a former resident. Maybe they were disgruntled. Maybe they said something on Doximity. There's so many venues that I'm not sure which platform is the best platform or which could be validated. So I would say do your homework and cross-reference.
Okay. Thank you for that. That was these were been excellent answers. I appreciate it again. So my colleague Samir will take over now and ask a few more questions.
Sure. Thanks, Sultan.
All right. So just a couple more questions. So you were saying something about how this is going to be such a virtual process. I was wondering, are there any aspects of the application that might be emphasized more this year because it's virtual, as opposed to in prior processes where you got to see the person in person?
Yeah, so I do think that we're going to be reading a little deeper into who each applicant is, beyond their scores, beyond their school, beyond that initial look that we might take. What does their personal statement say? What activities have they done? Is there a kind of commitment and passion that can be palpated throughout their application? What are some of the examples that might have been cited in their letters? And I recognize there might be holes in some of this because clerkships were cut short or postponed with COVID. So we get all of that. But I think the more you can reveal about yourself, it'll be easier for us to make some decisions. So I think one has to think long and hard about what they want to say about themselves. Again, if you choose internal medicine, why is internal medicine good for you? I think that's a very valid point. Not just internal medicine is great for society, great for a career in medicine, but why specifically, say for you, Samir, why would that be the right fit? I think those kind of targeted answers would be very revealing, would be helpful.
Okay, wow. That's very insightful. Gives me a lot of food for thought, especially because you said my name. So now I'm like on the spot. So another question building off that, because you're talking about standing out in an interview or standing out with your ERAS application, like making sure that you get your name across or get your point across of why you're doing internal medicine. Can you describe to us what has been a very memorable interview experience for you? Something that an interviewee did that stood out?
You know, and I think I would have to say that it's what the interviewees do when they come is that I feel a palpable energy about them that really, if most other boxes are checked, they're going to be very much a part of our program, or we would like to see if they fit the culture. And The culture is one, and each program has its own, and you have to palpate that culture virtually, and I have to palpate and feel the pulse of the candidate virtually. And I think that's the challenge. But nevertheless, I think being yourself, answering questions thoughtfully, making sure that you convey your interest and why you're interested in a particular program, especially if the program is far away from where you train, I think there has to be substantive answer to that and direction for that. And as we say to a lot of students, location, 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 it is a big thing. So if you have a reason to be at a particular program, you should make that known upfront.
Okay, thank you for that. And so building off that, what would be your biggest tips to applicants approaching the virtual interview?
Yeah, so I think as you approach this virtual interview season, imagine that you're actually physically there. I think that's the best piece of advice. So make sure your camera and your lighting is appropriately set up. There's no disturbances, like the dog's not barking. All those kind of things have to be cleared up. I would say dress professionally, as if you were, at least so the top half is visible and we know that you're suited up in some form or dressed a little more formally. I think that's important. Follow the rules and guidelines as to when you come into a chat room, when you exit a room. The programs are learning. We're learning actually from our fellowship divisions how this is going, so that we get a sort of a extra boost when we come down along the road a little later. So I think follow the advice. Try to read, well, even in real face-to-face times, I always told my students, read about the program the night before. Questions that are very clear don't really need to be re-asked. If they're on the website, they are 4+1 or 5+2, whatever their schedule is. Those might be all posted on the website and should be. So you don't need to ask that, but take the opportunity to get to know the residents. I always tell my students that wherever you go, you're going to spend more time with your peers than you are with your partner or your family. So can you see yourself with the residents that you encounter in a chat room or whatever event they might have to expose their residents to you? So this is a challenge. I think it's a big challenge, but I've never seen residents join a program and really be wrong about that choice. And I've been doing this for quite a while. I have, in my career of many, many years, maybe three or four residents have come to our program that really didn't belong. And I think it's more they didn't belong in medicine than our program. So I think it's very rare to end up at a program and feel like you don't belong. So I think you go in with a positive attitude, you take in everything they have to offer. I tell every student, your aspiration should be to be a chief resident at that program. That's the level of work you have to deliver. That's the kind of teamwork you have to display. And then you'll never look back at wherever you landed.
Wow, that's
kind of a lifetime family. It's like your second family. I actually just reached out to my graduates who are out 20 years from my training program. And they sent me a video clip of what they're doing now, so I can post that on our website. Some of them are leaders, some of them are in academia, researchers and scientists. So they're part of this family that never goes away.
Wow, that's great to hear. I mean, whenever I look at residency programs, I ask residents, do you keep in touch with the alumni? And many of them say they're the ones who guided me to my fellowship.
Yep.
And so it's good to have that family feeling.
Absolutely.
So how is the Robert Wood Johnson Internal Medicine Program preparing to create as interactive of a virtual interview day as possible?
So I think what we've been thinking, and you know, nothing's written in stone, and I think our first open house, we've already decided to do it a little more structured. I just did an SNMA open house for underrepresented students, and the open house concept can be a little bit all over the place. So I think for our residency interviews, it'll be structured. There'll be an agenda. There'll be two faculty interviews, one with the faculty and one with a member of the program leadership. That's what we've always done. And then there'll be the opportunity to meet with residents. We're probably going to pre-tape part of our board review and our noon report so that that can be played during the session with residents, just a snippet. We don't really think sitting and watching a conference when you can't engage is very useful, very good use of time. And then I think there'll be a session every week, sort of a happy hour session, whatever you want to call it. Whether you're coming to our interview or you finish an interview, you get the opportunity to talk to residents. So as opposed to the pre-interview dinner, we might do a weekly session for the candidates to break up into rooms and meet with residents. We wouldn't be there, we'd be residents alone.
Okay. Well, so that was going to be my next question. How are you replacing the pre-interview dinner? Because when I speak to prior residents, they tell me that this program wine and dined them. And so you pretty much answered that.
Yeah, we never had wine, but we allowed you to get your own wine for sure. But I think that that's a big part. I have to say, actually, we only introduced that 2 years ago. We never had any pre-interview event. We introduced that and became a bigger hit than we anticipated. And so now, obviously, COVID has cut short that plan. So I think having some kind of a group session with our residents and breaking them up into rooms, maybe ones and then twos and threes, because the interns only know a few months worth, but the twos and threes obviously have more of a history as far as fellowship and the support and what is unique about our program and why should you consider our program over others. I think those are all the conversations that can be had with residents and what is unique and what could you change. If there's one thing you could change about our program, what would that be? So I think these kind of conversations can happen post-interview or pre-interview at some kind of a meeting with the house staff.
Okay. All right. And I guess just one last question then, because you've covered everything in the last answer. But are there going to be any opportunities for students to like meet with residents one-on-one after the interview to have a more intimate discussion about the program?
You mean via Zoom?
Yeah, via Zoom.
Yeah. I think, I never thought about that. I think this is a great opportunity. I think our residents would welcome that. And this is a great idea. I will take it back to our leadership team and perhaps get a list of people available according to dates, based on their schedules, who they could set a Zoom up with one-on-one. But emails are always available, but you could do a Zoom as well.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, I was figuring something, if you guys had something more formal, like a mentor mentee, like you could reach out, something like that.
Yeah, we don't really have anything structured like that. I mean, once you enter the residency, we're all over and all around. But our students have faculty mentors, but we haven't really thought about setting up a mentor mentee prior to entry into our program.
Okay. Well, those are all of our questions. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, sending it out to the ACP students?
Yeah, I just want to say that these are trying times for programs and most certainly for students. And as program leaders, we recognize that. I think we understand the challenge it's going to face, that challenge that all of us have to face. But I think you guys are going to just do phenomenally well. I don't think there should be any fear or angst. And if it is, I think it'll calm down once you start your interviews. So I wish everybody well, and I hope you'll visit with us and land up at the best program you can be. Good luck.
Thank you so much for taking out the time to speak with us. And I'm sure that your words are going to bring a lot of calmness to a lot of anxious fourth years right now.
I hope so. Good luck. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.